From the KCSB FM studio in Santa Barbara, welcome to Radio Causeway. I'm Katrina.
And I'm Tim. This is your weekly showcase bringing you timely interviews and bridging your world of music. It's the summer solstice, and today we will be revisiting an April 12th interview Pav and I had with Dr. Michael T. Bowers, director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara, about his potential breakthrough in the treatment of Alzheimer's and other amyloid-related diseases.
Later in the show, we'll bring you the Mullets, strange news, and yeah, free music. Stay with us.
Good morning. You're on KCSB FM 91.9 in Santa Barbara and streaming live at kcsb.org. This is Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
Got a great show lined up for you. Happy solstice, everybody. Today we will be looking back at an interview with Dr. Michael T. Bowers of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara. Interview conducted in April. You can feel free to call in today at 805-893-2424. You're on Radio Causeway. Here with us to discuss the recent article published in the journal Nature Chemistry titled Ion Mobility Mass Spectrometry Reveals a Conformational Conversion from Random Assembly to Beta Sheet in Amyloid Fibril Formation is Dr. Michael T. Bowers, director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara. Dr. Bowers, welcome to Radio Causeway.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. Looking forward to the discussion.
So it was a mouthful, the title of the article. Before we jump into the findings that your group had, can we start by just unpacking what amyloid is and what amyloid-related diseases are?
An amyloid is when usually a peptide or protein in the body starts to self-aggregate. That is, it will fold itself in a certain way that it attracts other members of just like it, so it'll form dimers, and those dimers might go to tetramers, which is four, and then octamers or something like that. So it keeps growing, and it gets out of control, and the body has a process by which it eliminates things that it doesn't want in it, but somehow these amyloid systems avoid that, and eventually they become very, very, very large, which is when they're really called amyloid plaques, which is an inert material that deposits itself wherever the amyloid forms. The diseases that are dominant in neurological diseases that we've all heard of, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, mad cow disease is another one, Huntington's, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is ALS, those are all in the brain neurological diseases, and another huge disease currently, disease du jour, really is diabetes type 2, and that occurs in the pancreas. And so these are all have very similar motifs in that they're all amyloids that form from self-assembly of one specific peptide or protein, which is a string of amino acids, one of the building blocks in the body.
Before we started the show, we were talking, and you had told us about the estimation of Alzheimer's alone. Can you talk about the number that you told us before we got on?
In 2010, the latest numbers from the Alzheimer's Society, there were approximately 5.3 million Americans diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And one thing I'll say before I go through any more numbers, Alzheimer's is ubiquitous around the world. It doesn't care if you're an American, European, African, Indian, any. It doesn't matter. It doesn't respect type or geography. But there's 5.3 million Americans diagnosed. There's probably more than that, but that's how many is diagnosed. And because we're an aging society, they expect this number to grow, if left unabated, to about 13.5 million by 2050. And you can imagine the enormous human suffering and cost of that. But financially, they expect it also will cost $20 trillion to treat only Alzheimer's disease among many diseases over that 40-year period. So that's a break the bank kind of number. So we have to do something about it.
That's astronomical.
Well, how, I mean, to take Alzheimer's as one case among the variety of amyloid diseases, how are these diseases traditionally diagnosed or treated?
They're diagnosed symptomatically because obviously a neurological disease in the brain, for example, you can't go in there and look around and see what's there. But they start to notice symptoms, and then they have a series of tests that they can do to see if neurons are dying, et cetera, that are invasive but not surgically invasive to go in there. And one of the big deals that has to come out in all these diseases is an early marker. In other words, how can we tell you've got the disease early on before it's progressed to the point where it's disabling? So that's a second area of research that's going on. We're not currently involved in that. We're more involved in the solution end.
So let's, let's get into your study before we chew up too much of your time. What was your study looking at? How did it find its results?
Okay, this particular paper looks at the general process that's going to be applicable to all amyloid diseases because all of them go through a similar motif. However, the more we look at each disease, each one has its own specific aspects to it. This paper is important for a number of reasons because it allows us to follow a number of model systems, not the actual disease-causing systems. We can come back and talk about those, which we're also studying in a minute. Number of model systems where we can follow them right from the beginning all the way through a transition period where they go from normal kind of aggregation processes into this thing called beta sheet where they line up in almost straight lines relative to each other and then grow very rapidly after. So for the very first time, it's never been observed before. For the very first time, we were able to observe it. And that tells us, A, we can determine what the mechanism is, and B, we can go in with therapeutic agents and try and disrupt it.
That's really exciting. This ion mobility method, what is that new? Is that
that's the key to the whole thing. That it's a method that we really developed about 20 years ago to look at a totally different problem, a problem in material science, how carbon in a carbon arc actually self associates, and when it does, it forms things called fullerenes or buckyball, and you may remember these look like soccer balls, and nobody understood how that happened,
right.
And so we were able to follow it because we could go in and pull out each of these highly reactive species and look at them on their own and get their structures, and this was a very important problem at the time. In fact, Nobel Prize was given for the determination of this process, and we actually determined the mechanism of formation. So then we turned to biology, and it's the same kind of method. We can go in and pull these out one at a time. And normal biological methods, nuclear magnetic resonance and other very powerful methods can't do this because they have to look at the whole mess of monomer all the way through plaque in one big pile where we can look at it one piece at a time. And that's the power of the method.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
You're hearing a recorded interview done April 12th with Pav and myself with Dr. Michael T. Bowers, director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara, about his potential breakthrough in the treatment of Alzheimer's and other amyloid-related diseases. We're going to take a quick song break and be back with the second half of the interview. Right now we've got a track from Mulato Atstatke, My Own Memory, the name of the track. You're on Radio Causeway.
Hi, this is Benjamin J. Cohen from the Political Science Department at UCSB, and you are listening to Radio Causeway on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And Katrina.
You just heard a track right there from Mulato Atstatke, My Own Memory. It's solstice. Happy solstice, everyone. And today we're looking back at an interview with Dr. Michael T. Bowers of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara, an interview conducted in April. You can feel free to call in today, 805-893-2424. This is the second half of the interview with Dr. Michael T. Bowers. You're on Radio Causeway. Amyloid-related diseases range from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's to type 2 diabetes and affect many millions of people worldwide. Dr. Michael T. Bowers, professor at UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, is with us today to discuss his team's recent discovery that may lead to usage in early diagnosis and treatment of these plaque-related diseases.
Dr. Bowers, part of the we mentioned just before the musical break that part of the uniqueness of this recent article has been looking at these structures from a very elemental stage toward their more complicated development. Beyond that, what are some of the results you've been able to cull from this research?
Well, we've made the most progress. The ones we're studying in our lab right now with intensity are Alzheimer's, diabetes 2, because of their high prominence, and also Parkinson's disease. But we've made the most progress with Alzheimer's and in a paper also published in Nature Chemistry about a year ago, we were able to identify what we feel is the proximate toxic agent in Alzheimer's disease. And that the peptide responsible for Alzheimer's disease is called A-beta, cut out of a very much larger protein. So it's a little piece that's cut out. And that particular peptide self-assembles. And in this case, very interestingly, it forms kind of a cyclic hexamer that looks like a inner tube tire, and then two of those sit on top of each other and form a very stable species called the dodecamer, and that's the last species that we are able to identify. After that, it all goes to plaque, and so we feel strongly that probably is the toxic agent. And that's been confirmed by some animal studies where they've looked at memory loss in mice that have transgenically the human gene in them for forming the human A-beta peptide. And in fact, all they find is something at 56 kilodaltons of mass, which is the mass of the dodecamer. So a good confirmation, not absolute proof, but good confirmation. So we're making some progress, and we can follow the construction of this dodecamer from the dimer right on up to the dodecamer. So that's very powerful.
What is allowing, or what is knowing or identifying that dodecamer allow you to then do? Or what kind of agency
the nice thing about doing that is then what we can do is take different potential drug candidates, therapeutic agents, and mix them in solutions of A-beta and see what their effect is on the assembly process. And we have several excellent candidates now, both of which have been shown to stop the assembly at the hexamer, and so no dodecamer formation, which we think is very important. And one of these species, in fact, if you wait over time, over a period of hours and several days, will actually unravel it right back to the dimer. Wow. So this is very important. So we can intercede in the molecular assembly process and prevent it from occurring.
So I might be hearing it wrong. One of these has the potential of turning back the clock on say, some of these?
It does, and that's important. Of course, if the species has interacted with neuron and done neuron damage, then this, of course, we can't unravel that. But what we can do, even if you have a whole bunch of these things assembling simultaneously in your brain, and what we can do, these drugs, if they prove to be good drugs, and I think both the species I talked about, two of them, both of them qualify in virtually every way we can see as potential neurological drugs. What they will do is totally impede the progress of the disease. And what that means is we need to now work on the other end of the problem and find out what a good marker is for early detection of onset of Alzheimer's so we can know who to give drugs to. And if the disease starts, this won't cure the disease. It'll stop the disease also. Right. Yeah, you have to keep this in mind that this is but if these are cheap and easy to take and whatever, and it's an aging disease, so you don't have to take it for 100 years, number of years of your life. So,
the numbers you talked about earlier, the 5 million in what currently Americans affected by Alzheimer's, and by 2050 it'll almost triple to up to 13.5 million. So there's a lot of people affected, both stateside and worldwide. Hearing these results right now, I would assume that people are eager to jump to the to hope that this is going to be able to help them immediately. Can we have like a ballpark of how this will work?
So let's just suppose these things we're doing turn out to be viable drugs, mm-hmm. and we'll continue to search for better ones, but nonetheless, so suppose they do. So the next step, and these are steps that we've sort of taken baby steps on, is you have to get involved with a pharmaceutical company, because while the University of California is very powerful, it's not a pharmaceutical company. And the only way that a drug can proceed forward through a series of clinical trials to really determine, A, is it effective, and B, does it have side effects, and, you know, all these kinds of things. So the next step, which we will pursue vigorously, is to get engaged with suitable pharmaceutical companies and have them look at the drug from their perspective and try and get one of them at least to take it forward through. So, but that's unfortunately a 5+ year process once it initiates, and we're not initiated yet. So while these are extremely hopeful results for the solution of it, it's not an immediate solution.
You talked about the best results have been on Alzheimer's. Yes. Is there are you guys able to see what the difference is between the Alzheimer's cases and some of the other amyloid related?
At this stage, not because in both Parkinson's disease and in diabetes type 2, we're still back characterizing the very early states and their structure. Mm-hmm. Turns out they're not being as cooperative as A beta was in allowing us to get the structures. Although in diabetes type 2, let me give you 20 seconds on what happens there. Please. Insulin, for some reason, is not used effectively in people with diabetes 2. That means the body calls for the beta cells in the pancreas to keep generating more and more insulin. Every time it does that, it generates a partner called IAPP, another peptide. Hmm. And that peptide is being used effectively. So it builds up too much, and it starts forming amyloids. And it kills the beta cells that form insulin and itself. So you get this negative, or depending on how you look at it, positive feedback loop.
Right.
And so the more insulin you ask for, the harder it gets to make because you're killing the beta cells. So we're going after this amyloid formation partner, IAPP, and we're making really good progress, but we're not to the point where we are yet. So, but
I had a kind of a practical question, thinking about the identification of, going back to the example of Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. you talked about before, earlier, like the way it's currently conducted is you look for signs, which is well after the fact.
Right.
Identifying these amyloid structures, how would it practically work in terms of assessing, you know, patients and determining whether they have those? Because these are so
That's a very good question, particularly for neurological diseases, because mm-hmm. you can't invasively go into the brain. So what you have to do is clinically tested animal, you go through and say, in the lab, does it do the job? And the answer is yes. We're proving that mm-hmm. that happens right now. So we're in step one. Next two is animal studies. In animal studies, would it arrest development in mice, for example? Mm-hmm. And then you can actually sacrifice the mice and look and see what is found there. And then in humans, you have to try on different humans and see what it does, but you can't directly go in and probe. And this, but that would be the process that, mm-hmm. that we would pursue, and or that we, in conjunction with the pharma company, would pursue.
I was talking to a lab assistant in the department, I think in chemistry or biochemistry, mm-hmm. and he works in a different lab, but he I mentioned that we're going to have you on the show, and he's like, oh, the Bowers Group, their lab is something else. I walked by, and it's real elaborate. They're doing some interesting things in there that I just don't, it looks like a giant science, mad science project. Can you talk about the equipment? It sounds like it's different than what some others are using.
Yeah, the equipment is basically designed and built by our own group, and it's pretty elaborate. I'm sitting in a room, well, pretty good size room, maybe 10 by 18 or something, and one of our instruments would entirely fill this room. So there's a huge amount, because you have to have a way to make the systems you're looking at, then you have to have a way to separate them. So a very large high-resolution separation device, and then you have to have a way to detect them. And all of these things are, we want, of course, the state-of-the-art do it, and we've developed this. And I can say also that we're now working with a instrument manufacturer to take all this technology into the public sector where everyone can have it.
That's exciting.
Pretty much it's been developed in our lab and other labs around. We initiated, but it's now in other labs around the world.
Where can people go to find the work that you guys are doing?
Well, then go to our website, and from a publication point of view, it's the always developing and being upgraded, and I am probably the worst person there, but our publications are always up to date, mm-hmm. and so you can go, bowers.chem.ucsb.edu. You can go to the website. There's all kinds of little headers and hot buttons you can hit. And, just to get publications, you can get that. And then you can get areas of research, and we discuss and describe what we're doing. And so that's a good place to start.
You can also find links to that at Radio Causeway. Just recently published an article in the journal Nature Chemistry titled Ion Mobility Mass Spectrometry Reveals a Conformational Conversion from Random Assembly to Beta Sheet in Amyloid Fibril Formation. Dr. Michael T. Bowers, Director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
Just heard recorded interview with Dr. Michael T. Bowers, director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara, conducted April 12th. Right now, we're going to get into some music before we get into our Mullet Strange News and Yeah Free Music. Right now, we've got brand new music from the Mattson 2, former guests back in last summer. They've got a brand new album, came out last week on Galaxia Records. The album is Feeling Hands. This track is Pleasure Point. They have a music video that just came out with this one. We're trying to get them back up here in Santa Barbara, working on some details. We'll get those to you when we find out. In the meantime, this is the Mattson 2 Pleasure Point off their new album Feeling Hands. You're on Radio Causeway.
Radio Causeway.
Can help your love life?
Oh, really? Wow.
You can be sure that you have the highest quality product when you own a
Radio Causeway.
You will achieve better health, enjoy soothing massages, and have a sexy body after using the
Radio Causeway.
That's why I went out and bought
Radio Causeway.
It filters out irritating smoke, allowing my family to breathe cleaner, fresher smelling air.
KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
To prevent it from moving.
I come out of the bathroom, you have
Radio Causeway.
Yes, I could go out of the house immediately after using
Radio Causeway.
Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift.
Radio Causeway.
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
I'm on the radio.
When your sideburns get too bushy, just trim them with a
Radio Causeway.
Perfect for cutting children's hair. Just comb. No matter how much they squirm, you can give them a good haircut without nicking or gouging.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
That feels great on my abs.
My wife used to always complain about the pressure from her shoulder belt. Not anymore.
Radio Causeway.
Worked so great, he got one for himself too.
Listen Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
This is amazing. It's amazing.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina. Want to be on the radio? 91.9 FM KCSB Summer Orientation is June 22nd at 6 p.m. under Stork Tower. If you would like to come join us, you can learn more about that. We're also online at www.kcsb.org.
All right, so before that, we heard a couple tracks. The first two cuts off of the brand new album from the Matson to Feeling Hands. This, the name of the tracks were Pleasure Point, followed by Black Rain.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
It is time for the Mullet Strange News.
Mullet Strange News time. Get us kicked off with a little something. Maybe something you can relate to in some way. Report coming out last week from Al Jazeera English confronts a topic many of us have most likely faced. Have you ever misplaced your wallet or cash?
Yes.
Well, you know, I have too. But I think this story appears to probably take the cake for all-time highest total loss. Reports are that Iraqi Parliament Speaker Osama al-Nujaifi is claiming that up to $18.7 billion, $18.7 billion, of the Iraqi Development Fund has gone missing. This is three times more likely than what was previously reported. Yeah. In 2004, the Bush administration flew in a total of $20 billion cash to Iraq. That's a lot of cake. The money came from the seized Iraqi assets, the UN Oil for Food program, and Iraqi oil sales. The LA Times reported that Iraqi officials are claiming that safeguarding the cash was the U.S. government's responsibility due to a legal agreement signed in 2004.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, I think that was a direct quote from the U.S. government. At last check, there was no documents indicating who received the money or what was ever built from it. There will be a massive search for the funds in the days and weeks to come, no doubt. No word yet if they had had any luck searching between the couch cushions.
Now it's your turn.
Water shooting out of the intensely hot atmosphere of a star seems unusual, but according to PopSci, that's what a group of researchers led by Lars Christensen have discovered. The relatively young protostar was found about 750 light-years from Earth by the Herschel Space Observatory. Located in the northern constellation Perseus, the Sun-like star is said to be no more than 100,000 years old.
Fascinating.
The Herschel telescope was able to discern the light signatures of both hydrogen and oxygen through the thick clouds of gas surrounding the young star. The research findings indicate The gases are coming together as liquid before vaporizing in the massive jets located at the star's poles.
Holy cow!
National Geographic writes the gases come back together to form liquid water far from the star, at which point the water is moving at about 124,000 miles per hour, or about 80 times faster than a bullet coming out of a machine gun, according to Christensen.
21 gigawatts!
Maybe even more.
Sort of a super soaker on the cosmic scale. The Herschel telescope is the largest space telescope ever launched. It has a single mirror 3.5 meters in diameter, and the project is part of the ESA's four cornerstone missions along with Rosetta, Planck, and Gaia.
Yes!
The telescope is named for Sir William Herschel, along with his sister and research partner Caroline. The Herschels discovered the infrared light spectrum and the planet Uranus. The United States is participating in the project through NASA.
No kidding!
Yeah!
There's your solstice story.
Yeah, we actually had researchers working on the Planck satellite, Planck mission, a few months back. You can find out more about that mission on through our archives at radiocauseway.org.
How much do I owe you?
Half of nothing.
You mean it's free?
You feeling the love?
It's time for a Yeah! Free Music Pick of the Week, where we find music that's been made available for free and legal download and use in podcasts. This week we've got a band out of Guadalajara, Mexico. The name of the band is Hey Chica. The track is Adios Noviembre. Makes sense, I guess. I mean, yeah. It's a long goodbye at this point. I guess, I wonder if we're even, might be closer to saying hello, but... Anyways, without further confusion, we've got Hey Chica with Adios Noviembre. It's our Yeah! Free Music Pick of the Week. You're on Radio Causeway.
Thank you.
How much do I owe you?
Half of nothing.
You mean it's free?
You feeling the love?
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
You just heard our Yeah! Free Music pick of the week, where we find music that's been made available for free and legal download and use in podcasts. This week it was from Hey Chica with the song Adios Noviembre. They're out of Guadalajara, Mexico. Up next, we'll have some more music. This is another new song coming from the Brooklyn, New York-based Battles. The new album came out on the 7th of June on Warp Records. The album's Gloss Drop. This song is Sweetie and Shag featuring Kazu Makino. You might recognize her from Blonde Redhead. It's Battles. You're on Radio Causeway.
This is Dr. Victor Rios from the Department of Sociology at UCSB, and you're listening to Radio Causeway, KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara, California.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
You just heard a set of music. We started it off with Battles, their new album Gloss Drop, the song Sweetie and Shag. Followed that up with another Brooklyn band, Girls in Trouble, off their new album Half You, Half Me, the song We Are Androgynous. And we finished that set with Tennis. I guess Wimbledon's going on. This perfect, I wish I had that planned. But yeah, Tennis with their track South Carolina off their new record Cape Dory.
If you want to catch any of the show or interview, find us on kcsb.org and radiocausway.org. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Special thanks, Bo from Lompoc, for calling in. And also a special thanks to Dr. Michael T. Bowers, director of the Bowers Group at UC Santa Barbara. Our theme music was produced by Four Seguin. Next week, we'll take another look back at one of our interviews from the past year. Thanks for listening.
This program is a presentation of KCSB Public Affairs. The opinions expressed were those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KCSB, the Associated Students, or the Regents of the University of California.
If you have a comment or wish to respond, please address correspondence to KCSB University Center, Room 3185A, University of California, Santa Barbara, California, 93106. This is KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.